Hello, it is the last day of May, 2017, and it feels like Donald Trump's been president for 500 years. And Stephanie's here. Hey, Stephanie.
I am a giddy mofo today, let me just tell you.
Why? What's making you giddy? Best words?
Oh, my Lord, have mercy. Last night, I've been looking forward to yesterday for months, because yesterday Netflix released all 12 episodes of season 5 of House of Cards.
Oh, okay, yeah. Which I have okay, to so
that,
still even catch up on the last season.
That was a big highlight for me. And it did not disappoint. I watched 3 in a row, but in between episodes, I had my phone at my side and I had to check Twitter every 3 seconds because of Covivi, or however the fuck we pronounce that one. What is that? I mean, I saw that and I immediately knew he wanted the type coverage. Like, it immediately right. occurred to me. And he's too stupid to type correctly. A. And, you know, like, this is a petulant child mm-hmm. sitting on a toilet with an iPhone or an Android in his hand as he's trying to tweet his fury, because his eye is completely off the ball in yeah. terms of his role, you know, his duties as president.
Yeah, actually, maybe the phone fell in the toilet and that's why we got Covivi.
And it really meant to type kakaka. I don't know. But I do know that I was dying, and instantly there were memes and there yes. were these, I mean, all the brilliant, there was a lot of brilliance on Twitter yeah. last night. I saved some of my faves. You know, there was one woman, there was, ask your doctor if Covivi is right for you. And it showed a really attractive couple in a bathtub.
Oh my God. That's funny. That's close to something I did. I did. wait, I just have to go get it. Actually I did a couple, but, here, I have to find it. I said, here it is. Well, there's also the hat with make America Covivi again. I said, if you have an erection lasting four hours or more after taking Covivi, see a doctor right away. That wasn't the most brilliant one, but it just made me laugh. So
my favorite one, oh God, I got to find it. She did a takeoff on who was that freak on SNL? The guy who used to say, New York's hottest nightclub is Covivi.
Oh, that's what Bob, it has, that's what Bob, you know, yes, Bob yeah. liked that one the most.
Yes, and I told her, I was like, you win.
That's hilarious.
Twitter tonight. And her name is Sarah Rumpf, Rumpf yes. Shake. And she loved that I loved that. And it was just, I mean, there was just too much good.
My favorite one was this guy, Brian, I don't know how to say his name, Butler. I don't know, Beutler. He has a verified mark, whatever that, for whatever reason, I don't know who he is. But anyway, he wrote, in this moment, he became Press the Fifi. You know, it's like, I'm so fucking sick and tired of the media. Oh, in this moment, he became president. It's like, really? For real? The guy's a fucking maniac.
He is.
You know, I'll tell you, when I first saw it, my first feeling, and it stayed, it's kind of dissipated now, and as I figured it would, but I kind of freaked out. Because while it's not unlikely or, you know, weird for him to misspell something or get something wrong on Twitter, we've come to expect that from him. But the fact that it was up for hours, and it was a little scary to me, because I didn't know what that meant. I mean, I knew it was late, but somebody in his administration or whatever, in his, you know, close network of people, had to be awake. And they had to know that this was going on. The whole world was making fun of him. So it just, you know, it's like, were they too afraid to wake him up? What the fuck? You know, I mean, it's like, if I would have seen Obama tweet this or Hillary tweet this, it would have worried me. And again, he gets a different curve because he is a moron. But
he's a moron.
Yeah, but it's like, it's just frightening to me that this is our normal.
This is our normal. And that's scary. You know what frightens me is, did, you know, he tweeted a follow-up later that said, there's, you know, try to figure out the real meaning.
I'll bet you that was not his idea. Somebody had to come up with that for him because he's too fucking stupid to come up with it.
Well, clearly, because he would have misspelled fucking Fifi if he would if he were to try to revisit that. But he, you know, are they trying to take our eye off the ball? Or, you know, here comes the Paris Agreement.
Yeah.
And him, you know, withdrawing from that. Are they trying to take our eye off the ball? I don't believe anybody's eye is being taken off the ball. No. I think we are all in such a state of despair over the fact that this man is even in the White House, that those of us who oppose him, we're sitting in bed and taking some pleasure in just having belly laughs last night. Yeah. You know, I heard my husband, we were side by side in bed. I'm watching my thing. He's watching his. And I keep laughing. He gets up, goes into the bathroom, and I can hear him just crying as he's in there, as he's getting ready for bed. And he's looking at Twitter. And then he yells out from the bathroom, it's 12:06, every Bofifi. I mean, people were just rolling with it. And it gave us a little bit of pleasure in our moment of despair, our 500 years of despair since January 20th. It's sad.
It is. It's just, it's really sad. And I just, I don't know.
You know what? It gave me some laughs. I had some nice little comments that people were loving last night. And you know, this morning I of course checked Twitter. I dreamt about it as well. Cause I was so, just thrilled. But anyway, Philadelphia police, the roads are still slick from last night's rain. Please use your wipers and drive with Kafifi. You know, I mean, so everybody's having a good time.
Right. Well, even
this.
Like David from, I guess MSNBC tweeted Spicer on Kafifi tweet, quote, the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. So then From writes, he's right. The small group equals the president and his pharmacists. You know, freaking David From, I got to say, the guy is just my new hero. And, you know, I never would have dreamed that I would have either.
I would have just opposed him.
Yeah. I mean, he's a little smug and I don't want to, I mean, I guess condescending, but mostly he's just seemed smug, but now, I mean, it's like, thank God for you. I wish more would follow.
Yeah, I don't know if he's condescending. I just think he happens to be right.
Yeah.
And
prior to this, prior to the
now,
whole Trump thing.
Now I thank God for him. You know, I sealed the deal, my love deal with him when he was on Bill Maher a couple weeks back.
Yeah, me too.
You know, the voice of reason to that crazy... Yeah. Freaking Cornel West.
Which,
but anyway,
I mean, polar opposites.
I mean, we've had 400 things happen since then that we can talk about. But that was fun. And I'm happy to have had a little bit of entertainment. And now we're right back to, you know, freaking out. Although Comey was just cleared to put the hammer down.
Yeah.
I guess that's happening next week.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a day set yet, but it's supposed to be for next week, and it can't happen fast enough, you know. And I just want to say that I want to address something. I'm feeling a little agitated right now, and I guess I'm not alone because I think I'm seeing this elsewhere on social media. People are kind of being contrarians with each other. Whether it's, and we'll get to this in a second, but the whole Kathy Griffin thing, that the liberals are divided among each other about how to feel about her. I have my opinion on it. We'll talk about, we'll talk about that. But the other day, I was scrolling down my feed and I saw one of my Facebook friends who I immediately unfriended bagging on Hillary Clinton. And it's like, oh my God, fucking for real? Just the election is over. She's not running for anything. It's all fucking over now. And, you know, I get that there are problems within our party that need to be fixed and addressed and all of that. I do think we need to stay on top of that and do so in such a way that's productive as opposed to nihilist. But this whole beating the Hillary Clinton horse to death is just, I'm starting to lose my patience. And I usually... I have patience for some of these people that I'm friends with on Facebook that I don't agree with. So anyway, I posted on my page that I normally don't make requests like this, but I'm going to ask that if you see fit to bash on her, please just unfriend me. I usually don't like those kinds of posts, but at this point in the game, I don't even fucking care. I'll unfriend them if I see them doing it, but I'm just over it. So anyway,
yeah, I'm over it too, because, you know, if somebody is a friend of mine, they know what my political views are, because I was incredibly vocal on Facebook. Vocal, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And so if somebody wants to fight with me on my page, that's my page. I'm going to control it. I may engage a little bit, but when it goes too far out of my realm, I just say goodbye. I don't have time for it. I want to be surrounded in my time of need, which is now until he's out of office. I want to be surrounded with people who are either going to be intelligent about their conversations or who are going to agree with me. That's it.
Yeah.
And I feel in my 51 years of life, that is my prerogative.
And it is. It absolutely is. And as soon as I put this up, this guy came on. And so he's like, Kim, I usually enjoy your posts. I love that when they start off that way. It's like, okay, now you're going to try to shame me because you don't like this one post. Fuck you. That's how I feel. But anyway, so he's like, I usually agree with you and I usually like your posts. But and then so he starts bashing Hillary. And I'm like, can you fucking read? And he had Bernie on his profile picture, which, hey, Bernie's pissing me off right now, but I'm not going to bash him either, even though he's pissing me off, because I just don't see the point in it. I don't see the productive. There's nothing productive
there's
in
nothing
bashing
productive.
Him. I mean, I can have critical opinions about him and think that maybe he could be doing something a different or a better way. But, you know, in the end, while I don't agree with some of his motivations and his actions, I still think he's on our side. And, you know, and so I get that there are people. I mean, I had issues with Hillary Clinton. I had issues with the DNC that I've made very clear way before she became the nominee or, you know, even ran in the primary. I was pissed off at the DNC back in 2014. So it's like, right. I think there's nothing wrong with being critical, but the nihilist thing. And so anyway, I just kind of lost my mind in this. And so what this guy did was, you know, I was polite. I said, if you want to bash Hillary, just unfriend me. Thanks in advance, or whatever I said. So not only did he have to come and argue with me, he had to do the shillery with the dollar sign and say Bernie would have won and all this. And it's like, why are you fucking trolling me? You know, I mean, it's like, you're an adult. I'm an adult. Be a mature adult about it and recognize that we just see this differently. If you don't like it, then just don't be friends with me anymore. Why
you know what,
does
though, the
an
Bernie
adult
would have won
male
thing?
Need to troll me? Sorry.
It's stupid. No, you're absolutely right. But the Bernie would have won thing. Like, how does he know?
I know.
Is he prescient?
I mean, look,
I think he would have had steeped.
I think there is an argument to be made that he could have won, but there's also an argument to be made that the disinformation campaign that Hillary endured with Russia would have been applied to Bernie, and God only knows what either made up stories or real stories they would have had on him that would have hurt him terribly. So
well,
it's like,
yeah.
Yes, I understand that Bernie appealed to a different set of people, specifically those in the Rust Belt where she lost.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you could make that argument, but in the end, we'll never know. It's just not even worth screaming at everybody that it's going to be one way when we're never going to know. And it just completely pisses me off that these people are denying the Russia situation, and they are, the left wants to deny the Russia situation because I think they're like hanging on to the idea that people like me, or you know, people who are focusing on all the scandals taking place are saying that is the one and only reason why Hillary lost and we're blaming it all on that. No, I think there's fucking tons of reasons why she lost. Part of that is because of misogyny. Part of it is right-wing smears for decades. You know, and then I get some legitimate policy things that people didn't like about her, but still it's like, really? You'd really have Donald Trump than her? That I don't get. I mean, you know, her stance on fracking, I was not comfortable with that. There were a couple of things that I just wasn't comfortable with, but it's like, well, there's going to be, every candidate is going to have a stance that I'm not comfortable with.
Right. Right.
So you push them when they get in, you push them and you know, anyway, so there's my, it's like, I'm starting to see more and more of the I don't like to call them Bernie Bros, but they're behaving like the negative version of Bernie Bros. They just are. They're being misogynist. They're being, contrarian. They're still being nihilist, and they're still using this Hillary argument that it's like, why are you arguing? You didn't want her to be president. She's not president. Get over it and move on.
Get over it. Let's work towards getting Trump out.
Yeah.
So we can get a sane person who actually cares about, you know, and I'm interrupting myself here, but something really pissed me off. One of the many things, but this really irked the shit out of me. You know, Kathy Griffin does her tasteless, pretty gross, those photos were really gross. And, you know, it takes a lot to gross me out, but that's just, that was over the top, right? Her beheading of Trump, putting that up there. She's already, getting punished by CNN. They're not having her back for New Year's Eve with Anderson Cooper next year, you know? But anyway, so Trump tweets that it really upset his kids, especially my 11-year-old son, Baron. Now, granted, if an 11-year-old saw that and they knew that it was, of course that would upset them. But at the same time, Donald, you're pulling out of the Paris Agreement.
Yeah.
Do you not care if your 11-year-old lives to see 80?
Yeah, really.
Because if you do that, where the hell is Mar-a-Lago? Is it anywhere near Miami? Because that shit's gone.
Yeah, you should totally tweet that to him. That's a good one.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. And, you know, this is what I have to say about Kathy Griffin. I think it's stupid what she did, but this, you know, I mean, Bob had made a point that now the right is always going to throw this in our face, which they will.
Yeah, of course, they already are.
Right. But the thing is what is the right's biggest fear hard on? ISIS. So she uses the symbol to represent ISIS to mock him. And it's like, really, how can you be an adult? I get that she's a comedian, and I see all these people from the left saying, oh, get over it. Trump's so awful, and why are you blaming her for him or whatever? It's like, nobody's doing that. We're just recognizing that this isn't helping us. It doesn't help us when we're in the resistance. It doesn't help us when we're trying to, you know, there was a story recently about I think it was like a school where the principal was black, and so there was a black doll hanging from a noose off the side of the school. So how can we condemn that kind of behavior? And I know that people will argue that she's a comedian, but that won't matter. And it's not to say that the right is going to go, oh, okay, I get it, we're wrong. They're not going to say that, but we can't have the high road when we're celebrating someone holding, you know, a bloodied, severed head like ISIS does.
Good God. Yeah.
It's like ISIS is absolutely funny. So, you know, I mean, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world that could have happened, but she certainly didn't do anybody any favors. And clearly she fucked herself. So.
Oh, yeah, she sure did. My friend, she made a bad choice.
My friend Mary Miller, if she's going to listen, she's going to laugh at him. She has the cutest little cat in the whole world named Butters, and I freaking love her cat. But anyway, I asked, I just wanted to give a Butters shout out.
But hi, Butters.
I posted, you know, that it's podcast day and people could give us topics. So Mary Miller comes on and says, anything but Kathy Griffin in the plastic head. Sorry.
Oh, sorry Mary. Just talk about cats.
Hug Butters for me.
Well, you have a beautiful cat.
She's a sweetheart. She's a little neurotic though. She's upset. She's literally a neurotic cat. I used to have two. I had Pearl. This one's Miranda. And so Pearl was 10 when I got Miranda. And fortunately, they became fast buddies. And Miranda really loved Pearl. And then Pearl died in 2011. And Miranda was just upset.
Never the same?
Well, she's okay now. But for years, she urinated all over the carpet and urinated everywhere. And just, it was awful. I was at the time living with my mom when she was urinating all over my mother's house.
Beautiful.
And my mom has other cats. So now I, you know, don't live with my mother anymore, and Miranda's the only cat, so she's quite happy.
But, and no peeping on things?
No, she doesn't do that. And oh my God, she loves Bob. It's hilarious. She's so in love with him. She's every morning and night, it's the same thing. Like, we're laying in bed and I'm on my back and she comes and she lays on my chest and then she just stares at him. And then if he like moves his hand, she's hyper aware because that's what she wants. She wants his hand. And so what she'll do is she'll take her paw and she'll touch his shoulder. Like, pet me, and then he pets her, and it's so cute. And but she's so weird because she just stares at him.
She's obsessed. She's gonna suck the breath out of your lungs when you're sleeping, and just have Bob all to herself.
She's my baby, but she's anyway. When I took her to the vet when she first started urinating, the vet looked at her and he goes, "Oh, she's a tortie. They're known for having neurotic little personalities." And I'm like, "Well, that explains a lot." So, because when I used to live in a place that had ceiling fans, and she just started one day, like, she does this thing where she hunches real slow and then looks up at the ceiling fan like it's going to attack her. So now we don't have ceiling fans here, but she still looks for that ceiling fan. She's worried about it.
Oh my God. We got a cat. I've never had a cat, never been a cat person, never wanted a cat. In fact, I thought I didn't like cats, maybe even hated them. And we've always had dogs.
Yeah.
So my daughter begged for a cat. My husband grew up with cats, sometimes four at a time, and loves them, and said, "Come on, let's just do it." We went and adopted. I went to an adoption center for cats. Uh-huh. And I was reading, they have a little write-up on everyone, and this one said, has to be put in a home with dogs, can be the only cat. And I'm like, okay, that's two great features. Uh-huh. Three, his name is 11. And I had just finished watching Stranger Things. I'm like, all right, I want to test 11 out. Uh-huh. So I got my daughter. We went and sat in there. He comes in. And he started threading in between our legs, and his tail was up and curved, and he was just the sweetest thing. No scratching, nothing. He was a love. Uh-huh. So I went home and reported this to my husband, and I said, "I'm okay with 11 if you are." So he went down and, of course, came home with him. This cat is the most amazing creature. He's like a dog. He plays with our dogs. He comes when he's called.
Wow.
He'll just jump up and make biscuits in your lap, which is the sweetest thing in the entire world. And he sleeps on the foot of my daughter's bed every single night of her life and his life. And he is the perfect animal. I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
But he did go through a period, like I had to throw a mattress out and a really beautiful Mexican rug. Aww. But you know what? That's all right. He's past it.
Well, that's good.
And he takes his dumps outside now, so I'm all good. Good.
Well, yeah. Anyway. I mean, a lot of people have that. I don't like cats, and then they get to know a cat, and they're like, "Oh, now I like cats."
I never.
I mean, I've grown up with cats, and you know, I've always liked dogs too. I just find cats easier. For the most part, don't have to walk them. You know, you don't have to worry about them in the same way that you would have to worry about a dog. But I've always liked dogs. And so it's like, I never understood the people who like dogs, but didn't like cats. And, you know, I mean, I've, like I said, I've had a cat my whole life. And, you know, of course there's some asshole cats out there, but most of the time, I find that, I mean, my mom and people who know me well call me the cat whisperer, except Bob makes fun of me because I kind of fuck with cats, but they like it. It's like they have, okay, he's getting ready to talk.
All right. You don't just fuck with cats. You're like their nemesis. You love them, and they're like, "Oh my God, here she comes."
They love me.
How so? Do you manhandle them?
No. She's not cruel to them in any way. She just sometimes torments them like an older sister would to a younger sister.
I just fuck with them and play with them. But you know, my mom used to have a cat named
just tell the example of, like, what you do to Miranda, and it always cracks me up. And
what,
it's just
what
not,
you
it's
tell
nothing
it
me.
Because
well,
I don't
what
know
you,
what I
Miranda
do.
Does. Miranda, because she's so neurotic, has this thing that where if you lift her up and then you go to set her down again, she could be 6 inches from the chair or the couch or the floor, wherever you're going to set her down, and she'll wildly flail her arms left and right as if you're just about to drop her. And then so Kimberly does this just to laugh
at her
flailing arms. So she'll just hold her up as if she's about to lower the cat down onto the chair or wherever. And the cat just arms and legs flailing all over the place. And we laugh and laugh and laugh.
Well, yes. Bob laughs, too.
So I guess I'm an accomplice.
Yeah. You know what? My husband is that person in our house.
Yeah. Well, but they like it.
Give him
well,
a break.
Maybe she doesn't like that. But it's I mean, my
mom loving the cat. You're
I
providing
am.
The cat with love and tenderness.
Well, my
and
mom,
a little bit of flailing.
My mom has just a little. My mom has a cat named Samantha, who's just this exquisitely gorgeous black cat. She's so beautiful. She's very vocal, and she likes when I play fight with her, and it's funny because. I can tell, like, she would have this thing where when I used to live with my mom and I would work out, and because I work out at home, I'd work out in the living room. So, for some reason, I would turn the music on and I would start, like, kind of dancing around or whatever. And Samantha would see, and she would, like, literally run to her spot, which was she would get on the dining room table. And then I would kind of walk over to her as if I was, like, pretending I was going to get her. And then she'll like fall on her side and she waits for me to kind of like tap the right at the base of her spine where it meets the tail. And so I just tap real fast and she starts screaming, but she likes it. And then I can tell because I start talking to her as if, you know, I do the fake, I'm going to get you. And when I do that, she gets really excited and she runs like a, literally like a foot and then falls again. So I'll do it again.
Oh, that's fun.
And I know that she is not the kind of cat that she doesn't put up with what she doesn't want to put up with. So this is a game that she enjoys, you know.
Of
and
course,
so it's like,
or,
it's
she'd,
just,
or she'd split.
Yeah, or she'd scratch the hell out of me. So, you know, it's just I have always been the kind of, I guess, agitator of cats, but not in a mean way, but just like they, because cats are, you know, they like that. They have that instinctual kind of, they like to kill their prey and all that stuff. So it's like, that's why they like to play with feathers and the fake mousies, and they like to go chasing after the mousies. So it's like it's just another form of play. That's
yes.
how I see it. But I love all kitties.
Yeah. I'm a cat person now, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Oh, man.
Well, somebody,
that was a nice diversion.
Yes, that was a nice diversion. And somebody, and I only want to spend a minute on this because it just, this kind of thing makes me angry. But when I asked the question about topics, Sarah suggested that we talk about, I'm going to get it here, about the MRA response to what happened in, where is it? Let me see. Portland stabbings.
Mm.
And I don't know if you know who Paul Elam is, but he's mm-hmm. kind of like the head of the men's rights activist crowd, which are just basically misogyny hell. It's like misogynist hell fucking lit. They're awful. So anyway, he wrote, two more good men killed by chivalry. Let this be a lesson to your sons. Then he tweets, challenging a madman for being verbally abusive and dying for it is not heroics, it's stupidity. Glorifying this kind of death is insane. And then he says, people want men who are willing to die for them. That's why they think mindless chivalry, stupidity is heroics. Sad, just like Trump would say. So basically the gist of his argument is that, you know, the guys who were trying to protect those women died because of chivalry, and that they shouldn't have taken up for her. And it's just, go ahead.
It's that that's just the most ridiculous thing I've heard, because I'll tell you what, as a person who had, had slurs yelled at them for much of my upbringing, that would be me.
Yeah.
I would never sit idly by while anyone was being taunted for their religion, the color of their skin, their sexual orientation. I may have died that day had I been on that train.
Yeah.
And so does that make me chivalrous? No, that makes me a decent human being.
Yeah.
Who isn't going to sit by and watch people threatened because of something that, it's just that's ridiculous. I'm looking at this a-hole right now on Twitter, this Paul Elam, by the way.
He's
talking
awful.
About dubious rape cases in the military and stuff. I mean, the guy, this is just a misogynist who would have sat and sipped his coffee on the train and probably chuckled had he seen it happen.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I'm aware. I try to really, like, I haven't even written too much about the men's rights activists, mainly because I don't want to call attention to them. I mean, I have on occasion, but I don't want to give them any more attention than they already get. And and they're this group, this small group of very angry, angry men who really hate women. Of course, they like to pretend that they don't, but they do, because they don't want to acknowledge anything in reality when it comes to women's rights or equality. And they just basically say we're whining and complaining. And then, but they take it even further than that with arguments like this. And, you know, while I agree, there are, you know, like, okay, so there's a bit of society that's patriarchal and we still have to overcome that. I don't think obviously the United States, although it's taking a very, horrible direction, where it comes to women's rights, overall, it's not like we have it the worst in the world. Clearly, we have, you know, women are fortunate in the United States, but I don't think we're all the way there. But I do think that boys in our society deal with patriarchy too, because they're told that they're not allowed to express their feelings, that that's gay or something, you know, or they're, you know, they're shamed for it. And gay is used as an epithet. And so, I mean, you know, and, but they kind of take that argument. They don't necessarily recognize that as patriarchy, but they will whine and complain about how unfair everything is for boys and for young men, without even realizing it's patriarchy, but they blame women for it. And it's like, oh my God, it's just, you know, it's like, there's no, it's impossible to argue with them. And of course, you know, Trump is their hero.
Right. And so, you know what, at the listening to you and now being aware of this douchebag, I won't even waste my time with it.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know, do my best to bring attention to NARAL or Planned Parenthood or honor the men who actually, you know, trust women. And, those people, I can't wait for them to go back into the shadows.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to happen. It has to, because this is not sustainable. This administration, this open racism, this open misogyny, this, just this climate denying, all this crap. It can't happen. You know, I lay in bed last night after the Covfefe laughing sort of ended. And I said to my husband, I mean, I'm like a manic split personality, because I said, okay, so if he pulls out of the Paris Accords, can we get back in?
Yeah, you know, I know. Can we?
And
I wonder
if he withdraws from NATO, will they let us back in when a sane person takes office? Honestly.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, those are that's because I want my kids to have kids and have a place to live and have air to breathe. And, you know, we need to bust a move right now on those things. And, you know, we keep educating the young people. You stand up, you and Bob, and I stand up for what we believe is right. And we keep the conversation going. And you know, we're doing our part in doing that. I really, truly believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting together the meme to get, you know, how many thousands of donations did we get to Planned Parenthood in his name? Yesterday, Elise Hoag of NARAL sent out an email saying, it's time to bring this back. Let's make a donation in Mike Pence's name.
Look at you. It was all your idea.
Huh?
That was all your idea.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to write to her and go, my friend Kimberly and I, but, you know, instead I just made a monthly donation to NARAL in Mike Pence's name, because I have to do that.
Yeah.
We have to do that, and we have to keep the conversation going, and we can laugh about it because sometimes the shit is hysterical.
Yeah.
But other times it's terrifying. And the only way I can combat my fear is to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And doing this with you. And
it's,
you know,
the way, it's the way to keep sane. I know.
Yeah. These MRA Paul Elam types, screw them. I don't want anything to do with that crap.
Yeah, I mean, as a feminist, you know, it's certainly something that, you know, is talked about in the feminist groups and pages and stuff. But I have a hard time, like I said, writing about it or paying too much of attention to them because I don't think they deserve the attention.
They don't, because they're morons, and that's ancient. You know, that sort of attitude and those opinions are just, they're outdated.
You know, did you see the story? Because I want to read something I posted yesterday. Did you see the story that Jared Kushner basically gave it away that Trump knows that Republicans are stupid and uses it against them? Did you see that?
No.
Okay, so check this out. So the story is basically this. Jared Kushner used to own the New York Observer. He no longer does. There's a woman named Elizabeth Spears or Spires. I don't know how to say her name. Anyway, Elizabeth, I'm just going to call her. She's got a little verification check mark on her Twitter account. And so she posted this to Twitter on May 28th. And she wrote, "My response to a right-wing blogger who called me a kook and a loser for stating that Donald Trump is a liar." So this is what she posted. And she took a screenshot. She wrote, "Let me tell you a story, Doug. My opinion about Trump is formed by, among other things, actual real-life interaction. Interaction with the family and having covered the business he's in, where he was such a notorious liar that a friend of his once said, he lied to you about what time of day it was just for the practice." And that was a friend. So when I was the editor of the New York Observer and Jared Kushner and I were going back and forth about how the paper should cover him, I told Jared that I was particularly appalled by his father-in-law's birtherism stance, which I viewed as cynical and racist. He rolled his eyes and said, "He doesn't really believe it, Elizabeth. He just knows Republicans are stupid and they'll buy it."
Oh.
So then she writes, "And sadly, he was apparently right." And then she goes on to say, "But let's be clear, he was talking about you, Doug. Trump did not con Democrats. He conned and is still conning his base. So you have every right to your gullibility, and I won't be trying to deprive you of it, but personally, I'd rather know what the hell is going on." So yeah, this kind of goes back to what I was saying about how, you know, I think the birther thing probably came from Russia. You know, from Putin, like, "Hey, you reality star man," because they look out for that shit. We learned that from Brennan. You know, the Russians are looking for somebody with a high profile, already with a decent following, some stupid, useful idiot that they can unwittingly make into a Russian agent. So, you know, I think maybe somebody gave Trump that that idea, because what he does is he rallies up a base.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whether or not it came from Russia doesn't really matter. The point is Trump didn't even believe it. And I'm not surprised at all by that.
Well, and here's the guy who said, "If I ever did run, I'd run as a Republican because they're so stupid."
Exactly.
I mean, that's just consistency. That's like confirmation that he really, truly believes that. And babyface Kushner.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just talk about what's going to happen there. You know, he better toughen up.
Yeah.
Because shit's going to get real for him. And, you know, he's going to join his papa in prison. And he's going to have to, you know, his bottom is going to be anything but baby soft. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not hoping for that.
No.
But can you imagine if he is convicted of a crime and has to go to prison?
Well, if that happens, and I hope they do, which God only knows what's going to happen with pardons and everything, I hope they get stuck in the general population, because that's what they fucking deserve. I hate prisons. I hate the way prisons are run in this country. But you know what? They deserve to just live in the general population and get whatever is coming to them.
Whatever is
what about, okay, let me
whatever
ask
whatever is
you.
Coming to them.
Yes, exactly. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Sorry. I take the obvious and just put a bubble on it.
I want to ask you a question that, you know, people are bringing this up now, and I'm just not sure what your take is. So, of course, I'll share my take. But some people are saying that, you know, like, or making the suggestion that if and when this whole thing proves that Trump is guilty of collusion and beyond collusion, you know, getting the, after being inaugurated, working as a Russian agent for Russians. So once this can be proven, and I doubt that it's going to happen, like, boom, 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 there it is. I think it would be a series of investigations and all of that, that we would nullify this election and it would be given to Hillary. What are your thoughts on that? Because I have some specific thoughts.
Well, I mean, that would be a dream come true. How likely is that,
yeah,
though?
Like, not at all.
I mean, you know, I had to put that out. I wished for that for months.
Yeah.
And I finally let go of it.
Right.
I finally let go of it. Although it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, or why don't we just have an election again?
Yeah.
Let's just have a do-over.
Well, we would need Supreme Court to step in. I mean, that's right after the election, I created a White House petition, which I don't even like petitions, but I created one just basically saying that they should.
I signed it.
But I didn't really think it was going to happen. I was just hoping that maybe it would help, I don't know, create a mood.
Yeah.
More than anything. It's not like, well, I really thought that they were going to do it.
That's been our mood. Now we're just hoping for, you know, resignation or you know, impeachment, and then who knows, whatever combination. And then here's my new fantasy, okay? Uh-huh. Pence is dirty, of course he is. Uh-huh. Ryan's dirty, of course he is. So I'd like to see both of them go in addition, which leaves us with Orrin Hatch, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And that's not great. But I don't think it's as bad as those three.
Right.
I don't.
Me neither.
And then, you know, then that gets the ball rolling, right? And I don't think, God, I don't know enough. But I just don't think that the damage could be as severe if we got, for sure, Trump out of the way. And then those other two ass-kisser, mm-hmm. horrendous people, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it's all going to go down, though, because it's like, are they going to find, is this okay, like, is it going to come through the investigation, are we going to have a smoking gun that's going to push him out? Or, you know, Bob has made the suggestion that perhaps he's going to barricade himself in the White House and militarize everything. You know, so there's, you know, always something that, like that.
I wouldn't put that past him, but here's the thing. I mean, if you know, I like to listen to what Scott Dworkin has to say. Granted, he's extreme, but he has documentation that they're dirty.
Yeah, I know.
As does Claude Taylor and Louise Mensch.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sources are sources. And when people doubt them and then their shit comes true.
Yeah.
I'm gonna listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
I don't know. I gotta believe that they're all dirty. I mean, McConnell's dirty, mm-hmm. of course. It's why they're not speaking up. So McCain, you know, the Republicans with conscience and the Republicans who have nothing to hide are standing up and speaking out.
Yeah.
And that gives me hope too, because they're not just towing the party line. I think the majority of them are, you know, you got your Trey Gowdy's and your Kevin McCarthy's, mm-hmm. who, you know, he jokes and says he thinks that Putin's paying Trump. Well, you know.
But it's not really a joke.
It's not a joke. It's real. And then they tell him to shut up. We haven't heard from Kevin McCarthy since that came out a couple weeks ago, have we?
No.
No. And he's in California. So guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to go to his district and I'm going to be loud. And I'm going to do that with Daryl Issa. And I, you know, because that's what we
You're
can
fucking
do.
Daryl Issa standing on the fucking roof. You know, I posted, there was a picture of him standing on the roof yesterday, photographing all of the people dogging him. And, mm-hmm. and so then I thought, and then I saw him post pictures of him standing in front of that group. So I thought, well, then I took the picture down because I thought, well, then that's wrong, that he wasn't really, you know, running away from them. But it turns out, yes, he was, because he never really actually talked to them. He just had a photo opportunity to make it look like he talked to them, but he wasn't talking to them. And so in the end, we all know Daryl Issa is a jerk, and I hope that he loses his seat.
Yeah, he better. Come on.
I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. It really kind of freaks me out to think about the, I mean, I just don't want to go with the, we've got this in the bag. I think we have a good shot in 2018, but
we don't have it in the bag. Like, we can't rest.
No, never. We can never rest. I mean, I think this should teach us that we always have to be standing up to everybody, no matter what party they're in, if they're not serving the people. You know, I mean, I think that we should always be holding our elected officials accountable. And always. I think there's a difference between, like I said, you know, this nihilist approach, running after everybody who pisses us off with pitchforks and torches. You know, it's like, grow up and criticize who is not, you know, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or Cory Booker or any of these people. Criticize them if they're not doing what they're supposed to do, because they need to feel our pressure. They need to feel the heat. And but don't try to ruin them when they're the difference between somebody like Louis Gohmert and, you know, or some fucking crazy right winger. I mean, as much as I don't like some of the things Cory Booker is doing, I'll take him a million times over. But the whole point is, you know, it's like, that's why the Bernie bro crowd is like, well, I don't want to have to, or I can't vote for someone who's just a little less corrupt. So I understand that argument, but when you understand how politics works, you can't just hold out for the best possible scenario, because A, you're never going to get it. The way you get it is you stay engaged when the person you view as the lesser of two evils, if you will, gets elected. Then everybody has to put the heat on them, the pressure on them. So that they're going to, they don't side with lobbyists. So they don't side with big pharma. So they do side with the people, so that they fear that somebody's going to primary them and, you know, give them that kind of pressure. Let them know, hey, we don't like that you're doing this. And, you know, and then you have to get busy and find people to primary them. But, you know, this whole attitude of you have to be a perfect candidate or fuck you.
Yeah.
Well, this is what was, now well, there's, we have Trump.
Then everybody's F off, you know, because nobody's perfect. Obama wasn't perfect.
No, no one is.
Well, he's damn close though. I'm with you. And Cory Booker, that's a bummer. That's a bummer what happened with him last week. But I also think that, you know, you called him on it and you weren't the only one. And I think, you know, we stay on them.
Yeah.
We hold them accountable. We help them be the best version of themselves at all times and look out for us. This is what we want.
Because they work for us. Exactly. That's it. Yeah. They work for us. Mm-hmm. And I just wish more people would understand that we could accomplish more when we have a Congress that we can work with. We can't work with this Congress. There's nothing that's going to get done, you know? Right. And there are people out there who wanted this to happen. Like, you know, you look at Susan Sarandon, who I can't even deal with anymore, who's like, oh, well, Trump inspired everybody to get activated. And it's like,
oh my God. Oh my God. I interviewed her.
You did?
Yes. For the Lady Brain show. I screened her movie, The Meddler, and I got an interview with her and the writer director of the film. And she was, we were all scared shitless of her when she came in the room. She was an hour late, and she's stunning, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she's teeny weeny. I looked like a giant monster sitting next to her. Like, my head was four times the size of her head. And I had a blazer on, which I'll never in my life wear again if a picture is being taken. And I look like this huge Quasimodo. And there she is being lit perfectly. And she goes, you know, the makeup artist comes in and goes, Susan likes to be lit from the bottom up and blah, blah, blah. And so we're all like, you know, nobody's breathing practically,
wow,
including the writer director. Right. And so she comes in and I'm sitting next to her and I'm just asking my questions. Right. one of the questions, we were joking, should we ask her about how she says that Hillary would be worse than Trump? Should we bring that up? And it was like, hell no.
Yeah.
No, look, just look down. Don't even look into her eyes. But,
Why? I mean, what was her energy?
Her energy was that we were there. We were not going to step out of line. Like, I just didn't want to fuck up, mm-hmm. essentially. Mm-hmm. And I asked a question about her playing strong, you know, all the leads, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's Sister Ellen Prejean or Thelma. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, wait, Louise. She was Louise.
Louise, yeah.
To, you know, whomever. You know, these strong women. And she goes, strong women, what the hell does that mean? And I'm like, oh man, I thought that was like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But, and I had to back it up, and I backed it up, and I don't remember what I said in response, but it worked out. And then I kind of won her over because I took my mom to see the movie, and the movie was fantastic, and she's a brilliant actress.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
she
no,
is.
You know, you can't,
right.
there's no other way to put it. But, I read this quote that the director had said, and it was very, very touching. And I got a little choked up when I was saying it because it was a really moving film. And I looked up at her and she had tears in her eyes. And I'm like, drop the mic. I just like practically jumped out of the chair and said, I'm getting now because the getting is good. But that was it. And there was no, like, you know, we posed for our picture and I don't think I touched her because I was just afraid.
Yeah.
But, you know, this woman, she's earned her right to have her opinion heard. Really, she truly has, because she's done a lot of good. She's an artist. She's amazing. But I don't want to hear her say that Hillary is worse than Trump. And so, you know.
No. And then, you know what? Years ago, it was like in 2013 or something, she, like so many other fucking actresses, said, I don't identify as a feminist. I'm a humanist, or whatever stupid argument. It's like, no, then you're just letting the right wing smears win. You're letting all the anti-feminists win because as soon as we all find a new term, they'll trash that one. We can't let them control the narrative any longer. I'm so sick of them controlling the narrative. You know, they scream about the liberal media. And sadly, I just heard, I guess Lawrence O'Donnell has made this thing. Like, at first I heard his show was up on the chopping block. But then I heard no, that they were fine. Now it's back to he may be gone, and he's saying he's being public about it, that they might get rid of him and replace him with Brian Williams. And it's like, no. I mean,
I love my Lawrence.
I love Lawrence. I love how he's a badass.
Here's my thing on Lawrence O'Donnell. I just want to jump in on this.
Please.
I think Lawrence O'Donnell's an extraordinarily savvy guy on the business end, mm-hmm. and I think this is a contract negotiation. And the reason I'm saying this is this used to happen at the end of every season of The Sopranos. James Gandolfini is not happy with The Sopranos, and he may be replaced. They may kill him off in the series, and he may not be returning. And then, of course, he always returned. And then we find out later he was renegotiating his contract. So that's, I'm trying to remain positive because he's too valuable to lose.
Yes, he is too valuable. And fucking Brian Williams, it's like, he's basically GOP light, which I don't hate him or anything. But I just, you know, I think both Rachel, who I think is really the primo, and then and Lawrence, they have a very specific style that nobody can duplicate. You know, like, for instance, Rachel's been sick. And as much as I love Joy Reid, and I really love Joy Reid, when she took over for Rachel last night, it was just so painfully clear that Rachel wasn't there. Because Rachel knows how to put things together and tell a story in such a way where everybody else is doing segments. Interview segments. Here's what happened here. There's what happened there. Rachel starts this narrative, and every night she picks it up again. I mean, it's not always the same topic, but, you know, especially with this whole Trump Russia scandal, she is able to put things together in such a clear and concise way and explain things that, you know, you see the headlines, you read the articles, but she puts it all together in a way that makes you see it in a much more clear I don't know, it gives you a clearer picture of what's actually going on. Because she digs so deep.
She tells a story. It's a very specific style, and it's riveting.
Yeah.
But I mean, Joy Reid's fantastic.
She is, and I love her. I do love her.
It's a different deal.
Yeah, it's different, and it's like we need the Joy Reids, and we need all of those. But it's like, again, I see Lawrence, I see Rachel as unique. They have a unique, I don't know what the word is. Like, they have unique personalities, but they do their shows very specifically tailored to who they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, the first time I fell in love with Lawrence O'Donnell when I don't know if you ever saw him screaming at, oh God, Bob, what's her name? The birther woman?
Orly Tates.
I don't know if you remember her, but she's like this Polish or Russian woman. I don't know what she is, who was pushing the whole birther thing. And if you want to laugh, go to YouTube and enter Lawrence O'Donnell. And it's, I think it's O-R-L-Y. And then T-A-I-T-Z. I think that's how you spell her name. And it's fucking awesome. It's like one of the best interviews because he just loses his temper and he keeps screaming at her, get her off my screen or whatever. And it's just,
I love it.
I saw him do the same thing during the 2004 election. It was in August during the sort of high watermark of the swift voting of John Kerry. And Lawrence O'Donnell at that time was only a guest. He was only like a political analyst on MSNBC. And he was on with Pat Buchanan. I think Pat Buchanan was guest hosting Hardball. And Lawrence O'Donnell was on. And also Jerome Corsi was on, who's that Alex Jones conspiracy theorist. And he was actually the guy who started the Swift Boat thing against John Kerry. He wrote a whole book about it called Unfit for Command. And then so Lawrence O'Donnell at one point starts screaming at Jerome Corsi and Pat Buchanan. And going, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie. He kept saying it was so ballsy at the time, especially at the time, because everyone was being so reverential to George W. Bush because of the Iraq War and because of 9/11. And he was just jumping out in vocal defense of John Kerry, just calling anyone who supported George W. Bush a liar.
And he's just, I mean, he's like, it was odd. I don't know. I also don't know if you saw the night when he basically suggested a fight with Tag Romney. Did you see that one?
Oh dear God, Tag Romney. And remember those psychos?
Yes, and so Lawrence like got into his full on. Where is he from? Wicked.
He's from Boston.
Boston. So it's like his Boston accent came out, and he was kind of like a bro, and he was like practically like rolling up his sleeves and walking towards the camera, going, "Come on. Come on." Like, because I think Tag said he was going to punch somebody.
Yeah, he goes like full Good Will Hunting.
Yeah,
he
was totally. Like, it was so
like
funny.
Full Boston accent.
Is this Mitt's kid?
Yeah. I think Tag said that he wanted to punch somebody in the face or something like that. So Lawrence just like went off. I mean, he like literally got up out of a seat. He's walking towards the camera and he's like, he's looking at the camera as if it's Tag Romney, and he's like, come on, you want to fight? Come on.
Bring it, Tag.
Like, freaking insane. I mean, it was just the weirdest thing, but it's like, who else is going to do that? Only Lawrence. That's a Lawrence move. You know, you're not going to see Chris Hayes doing something like that, or you know, or the other one who just drives me fucking crazy, Chris Matthews.
I mean, I'll watch him, and I'll listen to him because I find him entertaining.
I know. But Bob and I make fun of him.
He's the dyed blonde hair, it's like lemon yellow.
Yes.
And then the spittle on the lips. You notice?
Of course I notice. Are you kidding? Every time he comes on, Bob and I make fun of him.
You gotta love Chris, though. Yeah.
It's Tuesday.
Let's play Hardball.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Go ahead, Bob.
He always does those words of the day right at the beginning of his show. Yeah. Like you said. What? Testicular cancer. Let's play Hardball. He just does stuff like that.
Oh my God.
My anus hurts. Let's play Hardball.
Anal oil leakage. Let's play Hardball.
So gross. I guess we should end the show now. But we're gonna do. We're gonna do. We should end the show on anal leakage.
That's perfect.
But don't forget, everybody. Stick around for End Another Thing. where we're going to talk about some other stuff. And I'm not even going to tell you what we're going to talk about. You have to be a subscriber, which, by the way, let me do my little commercial. So you can support us with $1 a month. You can support us by pledging $5 a month. And that's going to get you access to And Another Thing, which is coming up next, where we have secret conversations about things that you can't hear about unless you pay $5. And then you can pledge, you know, whether it's $10 or $20 or $50, anything you want to support independent podcasters, because, you know, every day we're fighting on the internet for you.
I love that people are being invited to pay to hear things that we can't talk about, but yet anal leakage is how we just closed the free show.
So you can only imagine what juicy tidbits we're going to have coming up on And Another Thing. All right, everybody. Happy June coming up tomorrow. We'll see you next month, and stick around for And Another Thing.